Test for English Majors 2010 Grade 8 Part 1 Listening Comprehension Section A Mini Lecture In this section, you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked.But you will need them to complete a gap-filling task after the mini-lecture. When the lecture is over, you will be given 2 minutes to check your notes, and another 10 minutes to complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1. Some of the gaps may require a maximum of 3 words. Make sure the word or words you fill in is or are both grammatically and semantically acceptable.You may refer to your notes while completing the task. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now, listen to the mini-lecture.
Paralinguistic Features of Language. Good morning, everyone. Today, we'll continue our discussion on describing language. Last week, we examined such features of language as grammar, vocabulary,the sounds of language, etc. In this lecture, we'll look at another important aspect of language. Perhaps some of you may wonder, what is this important aspect of language? Let me tell you, it refers to features of communication that takes place without the use of grammar or vocabulary. They are called paralinguistic features of language. These features fall into 2 broad categories.Those that involve the voice, and those that involve the body. Now, the first category is what we call vocal paralinguistic features. Vocal features are actually tones of voice. While they are perhaps not central to meaning in communication in the same way as grammar or vocabulary, they may nevertheless convey attitude,or intention in some way. Let me give you some examples. The first is whispering, which indicates the need for secrecy. The second is breathiness. This is to show deep emotion. The third is huskiness, which is to show unimportance. The fourth is nasality.This is to indicate anxiety. The last is extra lip rounding, which expresses greater intimacy, especially with babies, for example. So we can see that there are a number of ways of altering our tone of voice, and when we do this consciously, we do it to create different effects in communication. Now,Let's come to the second category, physical paralinguistic features, which involves the body. In addition to conveying meanings with tone of voice, we can also express our intention through the ways in which we use our bodies. You may ask, what are the ways then? Let me cite some brief examples. The expression on our face,The gestures we make, and even proximity or way we sit, are some of the ways we send powerful messages about how we feel or what we mean. Let me explain some of these in more detail. First, facial expression. Facial expression is a powerful conveyor of meaning. We all know smiling is an almost universal signalof pleasure or welcome. But there are other facial expressions that may not be so common. For instance, raising eyebrows suggests that you are surprised or interested in something. Other facial actions, such as biting your lip, which indicates that you are deep in thinking or are uncertain about something, compressing the lips, which show that you are making decisions,and a visible clenching of the teeth to show that you are angry, are all powerful conveyors of meaning, too. The second in this category is gesture. You see, we use gesture to indicate a wide range of meanings, though I have to emphasize that the actual gestures we use may be specific to particular cultures. That is to say, different cultures have their own favored gestures in conveying meaning. Here, a few examples may show you how powerful gestures can be. In British English behavior, shrugging shoulders may indicate an attitude of, I don't care, or I don't know. Crossing your arms may indicate relaxation, but it can also powerfully show you are bored. Waving can mean welcome and farewell, whereas scratching your head may indicate that you're at a loss. In other cultures, placing your hand upon your heart is to indicate that you are telling the truth. Pointing your finger at your nose means it's a secret. That's why we say that gestures are culture-bound. The third is proximity, posture, and echoing. Proximity refers to the physical distance between speakers. This can indicate a number of things and can also be used to consciously send messages about intent. Closeness, for example, indicates intimacy or threat to many speakers. But distance may show formality or lack of interest. Once again, I'd like to say, proximity is also both a matter of personal style and is often culture-bound. So, what may seem normal to a speaker from one culture may appear unnecessarily close or distant to a speaker from another. And standing close to someone may be quite appropriate in some situations, such as an informal party, but completely out of place in other situations, such as a meeting with a superior. Next, posture. Posture means the way in which someone holds his or her body, especially the back, shoulders, and head, when standing, walking, or sitting. A few examples. Hunched shoulders and a hanging head give a powerful indication of whether the person is happy or not. A lowered head, when speaking to a superior, with or without eye contact, can convey the appropriate relationship in some cultures. On the other hand, direct level eye contact changes the nature of the interaction and can be seen as either open or challenging. Last, echoing. Now, what is echoing? Let me start with an example. Some of you may have noticed this phenomenon in your experience. When two people are keen to agree with each other, they would likely, though unconsciously, adopt the same posture as if in imitation of each other. They sit or stand in the same manner. When used in this way, echoing appears to complement the verbal communication. Of course, when such imitation is carried out consciously, it often indicates that someone is mocking at another speaker. Okay, in today's lecture, we looked at some paralinguistic features, such as tone of voice, gesture, and posture. These features, together with linguistic features of language, like grammar or vocabulary, are all part of the way we communicate with each other in face-to-face encounters. In our next lecture, we'll watch some video material and see how people actually use paralinguistic means in communication to express their intention or desire or mood.
Now, you have 2 minutes to check your notes. And then please complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 in 10 minutes. Section B, Interview. In this section, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the correct answer to each question on answer sheet 2. Questions 1 to 5 are based on an interview. At the end of the interview, you will be given 10 seconds to answer each of the following 5 questions. Now, listen to the interview.
The word diversity has become a cliché in the United States today. It seems to me that nowadays Americans cannot turn on the television or read a newspaper without seeing the word pop up somewhere as a description of the American demographic. Then what is this diversity in the U.S.? Today, we are very pleased to have Dr. James Johnson here on our talk show. Welcome, Dr. Johnson.
Thanks.
Dr. Johnson, we know you have done extensive research on diversity. So how do you define diversity in the American context?
Well, at one time, the U.S. was called a melting pot, you know, which means that people of many different religions, cultures, and races could shed their traditional cultural identities and blend into one homogeneous nation.
Am I right in saying that a melting pot would emphasize the idea of all in one or being the same?
Yes, you may say so. Of course, when the phrase melting pot was popular, there was also the idea of being different. But being different then simply meant Catholic as opposed to Protestant, or Irish as opposed to Swedish or Italian.
Has the idea of being different changed over the years?
Yes, of course. You see, today we use the word diversity to refer to more visible ethnic differences. Asian American, African American, and Latino, for instance. And religious diversity refers to a variety of world religions, not merely different branches of Christianity.
And now, is America as a whole truly diverse?
Well, I think in all this talk of diversity, there is a critical point that may be missed. That is, diversity is not occurring everywhere in the U.S. Or at least not to a degree that would alter the demography of every region in the country.
Oh, really?
I can give you an example. Recently, a New York Times article describes the town of Selinsgrove in Pennsylvania. You see, in the last 10 years, things have barely changed in that town. The population has dropped by 1, from 5,384 to 5,383, and the town remains virtually 100% white. The article thus concludes that many portions of the country remain, like Selinsgrove, virtually unchanged on this march towards diversity.
So regions vary in terms of the degree and types of diversity.
That's correct. Let's say there are 3 types of diversity in the U.S., and they differ from region to region.
Could you elaborate on that?
Okay. First is racial diversity. States with the most racially diverse populations stand in stark contrast to those with the least racially diverse populations. Let's look at 2 states, California and Maine. From 1990 to 2000, California's Caucasian population, meaning non-Hispanic whites, declined from 57% to 48%. By 2025, it is predicted, that figure will drop to just 34%, which indicates a future change in the racial composition of California. On the contrary, Maine's Caucasian population was 98% of its total population throughout the 1990s. And by 2025, Maine's population will still be 97% Caucasian, which means virtually no change in Maine's racial diversity over the next 20 or so years.
This shows that racial diversity is not occurring everywhere. Then what about other types of diversity?
Right. The second type of diversity is age diversity, and there are some interesting age gaps developing between states. For example, there is a large gap between the average age of the 5 states with the youngest populations and the 5 states with the oldest populations. This, of course, is well known. What is less discussed is the difference between the racial makeup of younger and older populations. Most of the populations having the greatest racial diversity are younger on average than the populations with greater Caucasian representation. It is also well known that Caucasians tend to be more affluent than other ethnic groups on average. In our pay-as-you-go social security system, workers are taxed to pay the benefit of retirees. So this could lead to a future where wealth is systematically redistributed from younger, poorer minorities to older, wealthier whites.
This is a very interesting point. Then what is the third type of diversity in the U.S.?
The third is religious diversity. Immigration from India, Pakistan, and the Middle East brought radically increased numbers of Hindus and Muslims to the U.S., and Chinese, Vietnamese, Japanese, and other Asian immigrants increased the numbers of Buddhists.
Oh, I see.
But the point is that these religions didn't settle everywhere. They settled mainly in California and major northeastern and midwestern cities such as New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, and Minneapolis. From 1990 to 2000, the number of Muslims in New York City grew from 600,000 to nearly 1 million. In the Los Angeles area, there are now more than 300 Buddhist temples.
So, we see that many parts of the U.S. are truly becoming more diverse, while at the same time, others are essentially remaining the same in terms of race, age, and religion.
Yes, that is true.
Okay. Dr. Johnson, thank you very much for coming on the show and talking to us.
A pleasure. Section C, News Broadcast. In this section, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the correct answer to each question on answer sheet 2. Question 6 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 10 seconds to answer the question. Now, listen to the news.
Japan will start an aggressive push to market abroad its mobile technology, especially the nation's popular wallet phone, a government official said Tuesday. Although Japan boasts some of the most sophisticated cell phones in the world, the nation has failed to make its handsets, wireless technology, and mobile services hits outside of Japan. Among the wireless innovations Japan hopes to peddle is the wallet phone. The technology relies on a tiny computer chip embedded in each cell phone, which communicates with a reader device at stores, train stations, and vending machines for cashless payments. This tiny computer chip was developed by Japanese electronics and entertainment company, Sony Corporation.
Questions 7 and 8 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now, listen to the news.
Zimbabwe's inflation rate has soared in the past 3 months and is now at 11.2%, the highest in the world, according to the country's Central Statistical Office. Official figures dated Monday show inflation has surged from the rate of 2.2% recorded in May, despite the government's price controls. The country's finance minister confirmed the new figure in an interview, but said the rising inflation rate was not confined to Zimbabwe alone. In February, the price of a loaf of bread in the country was less than 200,000 Zimbabwe dollars. On Monday, that same loaf of bread cost 1.6 trillion Zimbabwe dollars. Analysts have said that the Zimbabwean government's official inflation rate figures are conservative. Last week, one of Zimbabwe's leading banks, Kingdom Bank, said the country's inflation rate was now more than 20 million percent. The locally owned bank predicted tougher times ahead for Zimbabwe in the absence of donor support and foreign investment in an economy that has been in free fall for almost a decade.
Questions 9 and 10 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the news. A large fire erupted Tuesday in Egypt's parliament, and 5 people were hospitalized for smoke inhalation, officials said. There was no official word on the cause of the blaze, which ravaged a 19th-century palace where Parliament's upper house is located. Dozens of fire trucks were at the scene. While firefighters focused on one corner of the building, the blaze burned heavier on a second corner, spreading to the second floor. 2 helicopters scooped water from the nearby Nile River in small buckets and dumped it onto the blaze. Evacuated employees said authorities told them they had ruled out terrorism and that an electrical short circuit had likely sparked the fire. Those hospitalized included Parliament employees and firefighters, said Ahmad Salah, the fire operations supervisor. The extent of damage was not immediately known. Egypt requires some fire safety measures in buildings, including fire extinguishers, but in general, the rules are not strictly enforced. This is the end of listening comprehension. Please proceed to the next part.